You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Wednesday, 19 June. We've got local inflation data due later this morning. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Jimmy Moyaha, on what was an epic rally in our markets yesterday. I suppose the question is, have we got ahead of ourselves? Renzo Mkunzi, he's head of interest rate process at Future Asset Management. The bond market, because that also had a massive day yesterday. Now, let's be clear, 0.5% move in bonds is absolutely gigantic. I think the 10-year at one point was 0.25% better off. That is huge numbers. Wandile Shilobo, Chief Economist, Agricultural Business Chamber of South Africa, foot and mouth disease in the beef and weirdly in the wool sector, although the wool sector perhaps unintended consequences. But is that resolving itself? Are we getting our exports going again? This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Sanral cancels multi-billion rand tender. Bids from 1.9 to 3.7 billion. But 3 years on, the roads agency says the tender prices are no longer commercially viable. News 24, JP Morgan double upgrades SA to overweight as JC Rand rally on post-election optimism. That had us underweight and they just went straight to overweight. Morning markets, US was green, S&P up 0.33%, the NASDAQ up 0.03%. Over in the east, mostly green, Sydney the exception, down 0.1%, Tokyo up 0.6%, Hong Kong up 2% and Tencent 2.1% higher. Commodities also mostly green, gold 2,344, Brent 85.37, Platinum 9.93, and Palladium's the red at 8.92, Rand 18.04, Bitcoin 65,600, and top 40 opening call 250 points or 0.33% higher.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Training now with Jimmy Moyaha, independent analyst. Jimmy, appreciate the early morning time. I think the technical term for what happened yesterday is a face-ripping rally. The last time we saw something like this was back on 15 February, 2018, when Jacob Zuma stood down and Cyril Ramaphosa took over. The big question really is, this really is about our government of national unity or coalition or call it what you will, holding together. If it holds, the world is loving us. I mean, JP Morgan went from underweight to overweight.
Morning, Simon. Do you know what? Yesterday's market movement was nothing short of extraordinary. And I say this because we've seen so many different things affect markets in the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. But to see the sort of global reaction and investor reaction to the government of national unity that we saw, this is definitely something that I don't think the world was prepared for. I don't even think South Africa in part was prepared for. I think that's one of the big things is all political conversations aside around the new government and the new structure, the market and the market participants made it absolutely clear that the manner in which South Africa has transitioned from its previous sort of government structure in the democratic era to its new sort of national unity and this collaborative efforts and how peacefully we've done that has resonated within the markets absolutely wonderfully. So the financial stocks leading the charge, obviously, but if you look at some of the other stocks as well, the likes of Clicks, the likes of Capitec, the likes of the stocks all making all-time highs, ShopRite as well included on that list, breaking through and making all-time highs. So it's not simply some stocks rallying by a little bit or some stocks moving up by 1% or 2%. In some cases, for the month of May, stocks have done more than 20%. I think of Discovery as an example. At some stage, we're at 110 Rand. Yesterday, we're at as high as 135 Rand. So definitely, by all accounts, the markets responding very very clearly in showing how they feel about the state of the South African situation, assuming, again, as you said, Simon, that this government of national unity holds.
And that's the trick. I mean, if the government of national unity holds, and sure, let's give it that is a given, there's going to be some tough periods. And I suppose the question is, does international markets give us the breathing space? I was chatting with Martin Ackerman yesterday from Citadel, and he's like, you know what, real reforms are going to take years.
Absolutely. So real reform is not going to be something that happens overnight. But the problems that you and I have discussed that South Africa is facing, there's a lot of easy wins and low-hanging fruit can take advantage of. We've had we're approaching 80 days of no load shedding, which is remarkable considering the last 16 years that we've had to go through. We're now transitioning into a government or an environment where we're potentially going to see collaboration for the first time ever in the democratic history of South Africa. Yeah. Now, there's going to be a lot of speculation around whether or not that can be achieved, who gets which positions, how do you then prioritize all of this. But by all accounts, what the market is reading into this is South Africa Inc. is being prioritized in this new structure, and it's not about necessarily holding on to power or striking agreements that would have been done a certain way in the past. Again, I don't want to get into the political side of it because that's not for us to discuss. We focus on the business side of it. But if you look at what's happening globally, everybody's facing their own unique challenges. The U.S. is facing its own challenges. We don't know if we're going to get interest rate hikes or interest rate cuts. We don't know where the U.S. is landing. We know that Europe has decided to cut their interest rates. They're the first central bank to do so. We know that South Africa is watching its own picture and its own local picture. And if you start to see a South African rally, I mean, the Rand hasn't been at 18 Rand and 3 cents this year at all. This is the first time this entire year the Rand has approached this 18 Rand or the 17 Rand 80 level that we've spoken about for the longest time. Obviously, prior to the election, we did see it dip around to that 18 Rand. But I mean, outside of the month of May, the last time we were in this range was probably around this time last year. And so you're definitely seeing that the Rand is strengthening off the back of these news, which could bode well for our own inflationary picture. But I do think as well that the global picture is still a factor that we have to consider. If we still see another interest rate hike or we see a stickier inflation in the US, it'll take a while for that rate cut to come through, and by extension, probably for the South African rate cut to come through. But the equity markets, and you and I have discussed this in great detail before, Simon, is that the equity markets in South Africa have been resilient. We've been resilient through times of difficult interest rates. We've been resilient through global challenges, and this is the time where our local markets are going to reap the benefits of having been resilient businesses that still achieve profitability and still achieve good results and good numbers despite tough macro conditions.
Yeah, I mean, to your point around load shedding, ShopRite and the Co made money in load shedding and now it's gone. I mean, there's a low-hanging fruit. Jimmy Mwaha, independent analyst, always appreciate the insight. And that's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. This massive rally that we saw, can it continue? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
Your money gives a damn. If it could protest and sign petitions, your money would. But your money can do more than that. When you invest in Stanlib's infrastructure investment fund, beyond getting solid returns, you are helping to build a more sustainable future through job creation and positive economic growth. Damn right you are. Invest for more impact at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting with Ranzo Mkhanzi, he's head of interest rate process at Future Growth Asset Management. Ranzo, I appreciate the time today. You and your team had written an article ahead of the election for Speaker, Deputy Speaker, and President on Friday around what we might see, and depending on the parliament that we got the Government of National Unity, a coalition parliament essentially. Much of that, of course, happened after our close. Tuesday's been a big day in our bond market. We had one of the bonds 6 times oversubscribed, new issue. We've got yields moving, what off the bond market, markedly lower.
Yes, thank you very much, Simon. Market definitely opened a lot stronger today. As you mentioned, it was government's nominal bond auction today, and that cleared very strong as well. So as you mentioned, bid to covers on long bonds were about 6 times oversubscribed. So very, very strong auction today. But it does follow, even prior to the first parliamentary sitting on Friday, it does follow fairly strong bond market movements in response to the coalition government formed between primarily the ANC and the DA last week. So markets responding very strongly to domestic elections, to the coalitions that we've seen arise, and this week really just following on from the strong action we saw last week.
Do we get any sense if it's foreign or local buying, or does it take time for that data to come through?
So we do get daily data that comes through from the JSC, but it is subject to revision. So read with a pinch of salt is perhaps what I'd say, Simon. The more reliable data we see comes out from the National Treasury every once a month, and we won't have sight of that quite yet, of course, in terms of how foreigners have participated in our markets in June. But from the subject to revised data that we do see, foreigners have been participating here and have contributed to this move down we're seeing in domestic bond yields. Or conversely, the bump up we're seeing in prices.
The move, as you say, yield down, price up, which is the way that bonds move. How impactful is this for our interest bill? Or is there just so much duration in the debt that the government has that, you know, one swallow is not going to make any significant change?
Yeah, I think at the moment, Simon, probably leaning that way. It will help in terms of lowering the interest bill, but not massively at this stage, Simon. That's a function of significant debt stock, of course, and that issue is still yet to be dealt with down the line. So I think we'd say it's helpful, but not materially. Okay. At this stage, would be our position on that, Simon.
Yeah, I imagine we would need, I mean, particularly if we're selling 10-year bonds, it takes 10 years to work its way through the system. The one key thing as well is, although we're talking interest rates here, these are in government debt. This is not our repo rate. The MPC, they've got a whole different decision to make when they meet in July and again September and November. I mean, they're looking at inflation. They're looking at different data to what we've been talking about in terms of government bond yields.
Yeah, very true. It's a very different part of the curve, if you will. What we're talking about here is long-dated sovereign bonds with terms to maturity ranging from the 2026 maturity 186 to the 2053 maturity R2053. As you mentioned, the central bank rate really just speaks to the very short end of what yield curves are built off of, and the consideration there is primarily inflation, consumer price inflation to be exact. So the central bank there concern themselves with inflation, growth dynamics, I guess, to an extent. And there we've seen domestic inflation remain fairly sticky above 5%. Domestic central bank wants to see inflation fairly consistently towards 4.5%. So there we do still need to see inflation heal towards that 4.5%, or at least inflation expectations heal. And the central bank building comfort that inflation will settle at or around that 4.5% midpoint of the CPI target band.
The one point you did make in the note you'd put out some 10 days ago or so is that what we have seen is that almost certainly, and never say never, particularly when it comes to inflation, but it does look like we've peaked. The ECB cut, the FOMC did not, but it does look like our next move will be lower, if the question is just not maybe just when, we don't know.
Indeed, that's our sense. As you say, first movers there, I guess, have been the Bank of Canada, the ECB. We expect the US Federal Reserve Bank to follow suit in the second half of this year. In line with the federal dot plot, again, our view that you mentioned was put out prior to that, but our sense would be that you can have about 225 basis points cuts this year. The FOMC seems to agree with that as well in terms of their latest dot plot, pricing in 2 cuts this year. And we think that the domestic central bank in that context, in that environment, will also be able to cut perhaps September soon, but September, I think, starts to become a live meeting, live in the sense that cuts are actively discussed and voted on in that meeting. And we'd expect the same for November this year as well. So we'd expect, or we think it's possible, that you get 2 cuts from the domestic central bank this year, and then maybe follow through with another 2 odd cuts in the earlier part of next year. But all considered, we see a fairly gradual cutting cycle, fairly shallow interest rate cutting cycle, definitely in the context of the steep hikes we've had in the past couple of years.
Yeah, but I think 4 cuts, 1% off the prime, is music to almost everybody's ears. We'll leave it there. Renzo Mkhanzi, he's head of interest rate process, Future Growth Asset Management. Always appreciate the insights.
If seagulls were hardy-dars who could afford to retire to the coast, what kind of bird would you be? Would you soar over the savannah or chase summer around the globe? You see, even when you stop working, your money won't. When you invest in Stanlib's fixed income funds, you can retire earning a regular income off your investments. Invest for more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Wandile Shalobo, Chief Economist at Agricultural Business Chamber of South Africa. Wandile, appreciate the time today. We chatted a few weeks ago that we were talking more about the Master Agri Plan and the like. We touched on foot and mouth as one of the problems that the plan had run into. Others, obviously, avian influenza, load shedding and the like. But I want to get an update on foot and mouth, particularly in terms of beef industry. How bad was the impact to an industry that had been growing ahead of foot of mouth? And have we overcome the disease, or is it still a problem in the country?
I think, Simon, we have now somewhat overcome the disease, but not without a great cost. If you think back in 2023 and even 2022, we took a knock as the South African beef industry, as even the small stock industry there, I'm referring to sheep and goats, even though the foot and mouth disease had affected only the cattle industry. But because the South African industry is export oriented, many of our markets looked at us and they read about this foot and mouth disease. And they really closed their doors to an extent that we saw exports cooling off in a number of markets. It is only really at the end of last year where some of the markets opened in China. I'm thinking about some in the Middle East, like Saudi Arabia and the others. And even in the African continent, they begin to open up. But where we sit today, I would say that we are somewhat getting a bit of a good control of that particular disease, thanks to private sector as well as the government by putting all measures in place to control it.
And I imagine part of the challenge is you're a cattle farmer, you're exporting some of your cattle, those export markets close. There's nothing you can do except trim your herds, because there's not, I mean, we can't just say to South Africans, eat more beef. I mean, we eat a ton already, but you basically have to cut back on your herd sizes.
The dilemma that you faced, particularly in 2022 and going into the start of 2023, was that while the foot and mouth disease was out and spreading in the country, you also had higher feed costs. Because ordinarily, when you have these diseases and the export markets are closing, perhaps you could expand and continue to rebuild your cattle herd. But this time around, it's the fact that you had also faced these higher feed costs, which were a global challenge. And of course, then the fall in the exports. I mean, you just look at the figures of the beef industry in South Africa in 2022. The exports were down 16%.
Wow.
We exported around about 26,000 tons of the beef in that year. And of course, then even the recovery that I'm referring to of 2023 was not where we were, because in 2023, the beef exports only increased about 3%. So we still have a long road to actually get there to the levels that we were in. And of course, then the fact of the matter was that the domestic consumer was also under pressure, as you were saying, and people were not really getting enough of that beef. And then you had these feed costs. This is to say, if you were in the red meat industry in South Africa, you have had quite a difficult few years.
And I mentioned wool up front as well. Now, that's not directly related to foot and mouth, but as you sort of alluded to, it's kind of like maybe a fallout. Someone sitting in some part of the world just sees disease in South Africa and stops buying our wool at the same time.
I mean, the dilemma that we face as South Africa in the wool industry is the fact that, I mean, roughly 70% of our exports go to one market, which is China. And this is not unique to us, because China actually buys 70% of global wool. They are the only game in town. The only countries really that you see them trailing China are about two countries. You see there, India being one of those countries that is behind China in terms of buying global wool, as well as Italy. So if there is a problem in China, the wool industry suffers. But in the South African case then, when we had this foot and mouth disease, their colleagues in China said, look, we need to look at what's really happening in your industry. And for a period, they didn't buy our wool for a few months in 2022. That, Simon, led to a 19% decline in South Africa's wool exports in 2022, where we exported around about 42,000 tons of wool. That was an issue. And even the recovery that we have seen then in the wool industry is still somewhat slightly less than that, because in 2023, we were up 18%. So we are slowly creeping back in there. But these were challenges that were there. But on the wool, I would say the guys had a bit of a bad luck, because there is a protocol that is in place between China and South Africa to say, if there is a foot and mouth disease, in the cattle industry and it's not affecting sheep, there's a certain protocol of handling the wool so that it can continue to be exported. Okay. But this time around, China did not follow through that until the South African authorities had to remind them of that, and we saw that market opening. So tough time for the sheep farmers also, just as it was for the beef farmers.
And I was going to say, what about our authorities? But to your point, they did step in there. My other question was going to be, but I think the destination's kind of answered. If it's going to China, if it's going to India, if it's going to Italy, these are giant clothing manufacturing hubs. I mean, Italy does fancy bespoke and China does Temu. But I was going to say, why are we exporting wool? Why aren't we exporting cloth? That really is about what those markets we're sending it to demand. They don't want cloth. They make their own cloth from our wool.
Absolutely. And I mean, we and Australia are the top wool exporters, because if you look at the world and say who are the top players when it comes to global wool, you will see South Africa and Australia. And which is why if you shop in any of these shops and you're looking at the woolen clothing, it's either it's made out of wool from South Africa or out of Australia. But of course, then that's something else on the industrial policy side to say domestically. Can we actually try to do something? Which is an important point, Simon, because that heavy dependence in the world on China, it means that we are all on China's mercy. And I do think that domestically, when there is a space, we should try to actually manufacture some of the products out of wool. And I mean, if you talk to guys in Port Elizabeth, there is already some of the companies there that are actually sourcing out wool out of the Karoo and elsewhere and starting really aggressively in the fashion and the clothing industry. And in fact, Simon, I'm talking to you now, this weekend that we are emerging from on the 16th of June, we were all gathered in the Eastern Cape in Middelburg, where we had what we call the Karoo Wool Festival.
Okay.
And part of it was to showcase that linkage of the fashion industry in South Africa with the wool industry. That's what needs to say. But quickly, on the beef side, though, the markets are well diversified. We are exporting frozen beef as well as fresh beef. On the fresh beef, it makes up about 49% of our exports. Frozen beef is about 51% of that. In terms then of the exports, they are nicely diverse, because on fresh beef, we are exporting to countries like Kuwait, Jordan, the UAE, Mozambique, Lesotho, Qatar, Zimbabwe, Mauritius, and the Netherlands. But when you think then about the frozen beef, it's also really excellent. It includes those markets as well as the likes of China. And you see Egypt also coming up, Hong Kong. Those are some of the markets that we are exporting to. And right now we are aggressively trying to open more in Saudi Arabia so that they are open for our lamb and mutton, as well as on the beef side, which we already enjoy access there now in the Saudi.
Yeah, and as we always talk, agriculture, a huge part of our GDP and even a huge part of our employment in the country. Wandile Shilobo, Chief Economist, Agricultural Business Chamber of South Africa. Always appreciate the insights. That's it for today. We were chatting with Martin Ackerman, Chief Economist at Citadel yesterday. How quickly can the GNU implement changes? And we asked you, and you, about half of you said it's going to take some years. A third of you said at least a year. The rest said it's not going to make a difference. It'll fade quick enough. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast, just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow, The Gender Gap.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.